Glenna.
So quickly, excuse me, I've also heard about some of the issues with Covelo. I'm not sure that they have, that they had regulations, and that might be the reason why there's issues. I don't know. I'm not from Covelo. But, and I've spoken on this before, I am for regulations because we have people, non-natives, growing on our reservation. We're not regulating them. They're sucking up our water. They could be using illegal pesticides. We don't know because there's no regulations. And like I said, people have been growing for over 50 years. It's not like we're looking at something that's new. It's not new. I agree with having an ad hoc committee or a commission or a group that has equal, you know, people that have views on both sides that can work along with Mr. Anderson. So anyway, I don't want to take up too much time. I know it's getting late, but I'm glad that this council is actually addressing the regulations. I think we've been asking that for several years now. So thank you.
Clarify one thing. I'm not talking about somebody like what happened in the last council meeting coming in and saying, throwing something on the table. I'm talking about setting up a process. Because one of the questions that I do have is, what about non-Indians? And how do we actually do that? Do we send Isaac Bustle in to raid? And that's how we do it? I'm not sure that that's the right way to do it. We need discussions among ourselves on how to do this. And I'm not talking about throwing a proposal on the table. I'm talking about setting up a process of scoping out what this does mean.
Les, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Leslie Hunt, tribal member. So some of the, and I like that you guys are presenting it because I think it gives us an opportunity. I know it's really late, but I think it's important to get on record some of the points that we have as a membership. And certainly to you guys, as Keith can maybe take these questions that we've asked and incorporate it into some kind of document, a starting point, an outline, whatever that is. I think there were some excellent points made with the previous speakers. But some of the things I'm really concerned about is in general how the tribe negotiates their businesses. If we do venture into this and we do allow it, what are the impacts? I think every time we do a voting in the state and in the county, there are fiscal impacts. There are other impacts that are noted by ad hoc groups. You'll see that it says ad hoc said, you know, XYZ. That I've always said we need to do that on our elections, is to say what is the, you know, the pros and the cons of it, so that the membership will have an idea of what they're voting on and agreeing to. I do have a friend that's been in the marijuana business for 20 plus years, probably since we got out of high school. But she is a kind of a forefront in women in cannabis, because she worked in it for a long time. And what she found was not only people from other nations, countries coming into California and having marijuana as a gateway to other activities, which means, like, you know, bigger sales of meth and heroin and slave industry, where that's the sex trade. In her situation, it was a sex trade industry. And she experienced it firsthand, but she said, sadly, it was from people that are technically from the county that were doing it, that were taking advantage of the women that were involved in cannabis. So it is a very dangerous industry to look at, to bring here, because we have two populations, honestly. We have youth and we have elderly. And the population in between is, you know, is really not documented in that sense, but we definitely know that there's, you know, the two populations that we talk about. In everything we say we're doing this for our youth, we say we're doing this for our elders, we want to, you know, take care of ourselves. Humboldt County went through that regulation process, and they did. They opened the door, and they thought, oh, this is really great, because it was in the thousands. I don't know if it was 2,500, but it was a couple of thousand to do their permit. So they thought, what a great way to bring in money, because it wasn't Humboldt County money. It was basically outsiders coming in paying these fees. And I don't know if that was an initial fee or if that was a fee based on the lot of land that you were getting and planning to do. But that was allowed, and then they shut down for a while because they realized we can't regulate this many people. There's just no way that we would be able to go out there and regulate and make sure that they're doing all of these things. There are farmers. I can't remember if it's some kind of berry farm. I don't remember the first name. I think it's in southern Humboldt. But they do. They do like this whole, you know, they have you come on tour and they show you how they're managing, you know, the water retention and reusing it and reducing it and being environmentally conscious. But they also said it takes a lot of money to do that. And for their break even is very limited. So they're kind of going in at eyes open that if we are to do a very conscious, respectable, and reputable business, the money isn't in there, and that is what's killing the industry in itself. So there's those questions. There's other, you know, we see dispensaries popping up practically on every corner. I think they're in competition with Starbucks, sincerely. It's unreal, the dispensaries. So then that cash flow for anybody venturing, and again, it's their choice if they want to venture into those productions, but, you know, that again gets limited because there's a lot of regulations on how you grow and what the requirements are and what your pH balance is and how you're distributing the water. There's a lot of rules to that. California is famous for a lot of regulations, so I'm sure we're, you know, overregulated when we want to be. So I just, the other thing is we have health, and we know from a study that was done probably 20 years ago now with children that are definitely in the 20 to 25 range today, talking about what was their gateway drugs, and it was cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana. And the youngest group that they did was fourth grade. So, and that was strictly because they said we had access to it. It was sitting on the table, it was on the counter, it was on the table, coffee table. So the access was, and again, that's a personal choice, and parents are going to have to be responsible, or whoever they're living with, the adults that are dealing with this. Those are impacts because we also know, I'm not a medical professional, but we know that the youth are the ones that have a very, very hardship. Like, using marijuana in an adolescent age is a severe impact to children. And it does have impairments as they go on as adults. But we don't really know that because no one ever studies it, no one ever comes forward. But I think the medical, you know, I would like to see more medical integration on, like, how are we doing it? Do we plan to have, like, some really open discussions about talking about our children and marijuana and the effects of that and the critical effects of that and being really responsible as adults, even if we grow it in the garage? What does that mean for us? We know that we have a high, high trauma impact on so many different levels, and honestly, it was alcoholism. And it's still the number one thing in this nation because it's so accessible. And it's regulated. You can't even get a license in California because they're all used up and everyone's putting them out to the highest bidder when we get rid of them. So we know that there's a regulation on that. It's high, it's costly to get an alcohol license. It's still being abused today, and it's certainly abused on this reservation. I would be happy to see a dry reservation just because the access, not only to our youth, but to our adults who are struggling with their traumas, it's a numbing agent. And I feel like marijuana be the same. I think Kimmer's gave some great points of talking about, you know, the medicinal properties of that. She has family. I have a friend, like I said, that was directly in the industry that talks about the abuses for women and how scary that is. And trying to get law enforcement involved in their little women ad hoc group that they do. But it's not there. The support for just women in the industry of marijuana is not there. So that's a scary aspect. We also know that, I don't know if you guys realize, the creek that goes under the bridge there at the in Willow Creek is called Willow Creek. But on your way to town, there used to always be these little waterfalls everywhere along the rocks. You would see them. There was, you know, a lot of movement because of water. But now when you go on that road, you'll see some of those creeks are now dry, and that's because the boundaries above those watersheds are now being ponded up, pulled up, and diverted for grows. And again, I don't know if that's a huge grow, and if we're looking at that, that's a concern, because that creek actually is one of our tributaries. And so we haven't addressed those that are off the reservation, but we certainly talk about Campbell Creek, and we talk about the ones that we know of. But Willow Creek comes directly into the Trinity, and that creek is definitely impacted by the lack of water that was coming normally from the Tribs itself, from these little creeks that run into it. So we haven't seen that impact. We've been fortunate this year that the water has been high and relatively really cool. Unfortunately, I don't know why it created so much moss. That's concerning. Again, water is an issue. I think there's a pro and con. Like, we need to show that we use water, for one, and we shouldn't be honestly putting a retention on, like, save water in your household. Because if we don't use it, we lose it, basically. So we need to work on that and make that a forefront on any issue that we deal with in water. Natural resources, you know, I know that forestry had an awesome presentation by Mark Higley about the grows that did detriment to our fisher, to our, you know, our bear and our deer population. They were poisoning the land. They were poisoning the animal. So it's so, there's so many impacts to this issue as a tribe. It's different because we're a tribe, and so we do everything 10 times better than the state would, because we want it to last. You know, our boundaries, our buffer boundaries are way bigger than any buffer zone that's in the Forest Service and Fish and Game. We do it extra and phenomenally, and we have a forest plan that came out when, I think, in 88 or somewhere around there, maybe. That was really great, and I'm glad that it's moving forward, but that should be discussed in there too. And certainly with our land base, you know, how you're saying sun grown, there's some impacts to that, the land itself, and how are we maintaining that? So there's just a lot to it, and I hope that Keith is able to kind of address some of these questions that we've asked today in the next presentation. And again, I'm looking just for an outline, because it is pretty broad and it's big, and there are huge concerns, especially for Indian country, for us. You know, we're not European. This isn't in our normal DNA setup. That's why alcohol and diabetes, sugar, all these things attack us, because it's not in our DNA. And there's history to that. Thank you.
Thanks, Les. There's a couple of people on the Zoom who have their hands raised. Looks like Jill and Bobby Kane. We'll go to Jill first.
Hi, thank you. This is named Keith or Kevin. The grow that's at Santa Isabel is a tribal grow.
Some is not, but keep going, yeah.
So I have concerns about you know, the way we're looking at it. I want to make sure that Lois had pointed out earlier that you should also be aware of what our commerce ordinances say. So I think you should look at that. I also, you know, Round Valley, Covelo, those are tribes that have had issues. I don't know if it's because they don't have ordinances, but I think those are close enough to us to be concerned and think about. But I think, you know, ultimately, let's just be real. We need to use water, so let's use water. Let's stop worrying about invasive species. I mean, isn't marijuana an invasive species technically? And, you know, as whoever was speaking said something like, well, it's good for me and my family. So it's a selfish thing. You know, it's really because there are certain people who want to do for them and themselves, but they don't want to really benefit the tribe. Because if it was really going to be this economic benefit, we would have already seen that in the community, because it's been going on for so long. And, you know, earlier in the meeting, we talked about the lack of teachers in the school system. And, you know, I have to think about all of those potential impacts. And it is going to cost. Who is going to regulate? It's going to be our environmental office. I think they have done a study on the impacts to our streams on the reservation from off-reservation impact. So, you know, let's just call it what it is. People want to do it for themselves and make money for themselves, not necessarily the community. So let's just do it and tax it and move on. That's my thought.
Jill, just one thing I'll comment on, because I agree with a lot of what you say, but the beginning part in particular, you know, I think one of the reasons why there isn't like an ordinance or a set of regs that's like up on a screen that we're moving through is I was just very recently hired. And one of the very first things I always do is like, you got to look at the tribe's constitution. You've got to look at those existing laws. A number of tribal members have mentioned some things in particular to look at. And I do very much believe like those are the first things you have to do before you ever start putting pen to paper and you start drafting your regs or your ordinance or whatever it is. You really have to understand the community you're working with. And I'm still in the aspect of my own process where I'm gathering information and trying to understand things as best that I can. So, you know, those points are well taken. And frankly, that's part of my normal process.
Thank you, Joe. Bobby Kane.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Bobby Kane, Jr., tribal member. I wouldn't say this question is particularly pertaining to the marijuana. I'm not either opposed or pro-marijuana. Just, I don't care about it. If you want to grow it, grow it. My main concern is being in law enforcement for the past 14 years, I've witnessed the deaths from substance abuse, those deaths resulting in children without parents, the mental health issues, substance abuse issues, poverty issues. These are all things I've seen firsthand for a number of years. So I see all this energy being given to this topic, which is great, you know, whatever. But where is the energy and the attention being given to our elders, our children, who are our future? For instance, the school, where a lack of teachers, that school is sometimes a safe place for our children to get away from their home life due to substance abuse, physical abuse, and I hate to say molestation. But there are no social workers. There's no mental health professionals. Your law enforcement department is almost decimated. So with that, what are you doing? Because you have no human services. What are you doing to these positions to fund them, to provide those services to the community and the tribal members? Where's the energy being given to that?
Thanks, Bob. You know, as far as the, I guess you can just talk to the energy given to those other areas. You touched on the police issue or situation. You know, it's nearly decimated. I think at one point in 2018, there was 20 officers. Soon after that, it began to plummet all the way down to where we are now. So we're taking, I think, a real hard look at trying to rebuild the police force to the point in which can really start to address some of these other issues. You know, we talked about going the federal route with a lot of whatever the policing is going to be, and that was rejected at one point. We wanted to utilize the tribes and its ability to, you know, do these checkpoints or whatever they might be for we have a dog now. We can utilize that for trying to identify, you know, the smuggling of illegal drugs in and around the reservation. So I think those are some areas as far as policing goes. As far as education, I think it's that something that we've seen for a long time. The educational system here in Hoopa is probably less than was desired. At the same time, you know, my daughter is at Stanford, and she was a straight A student, highest GPA. So, you know, to put 100% of the blame or a large percentage of the blame on the school, I'm not sure if that's entirely fair. But at the same time, they have to do better. They should be doing better. The superintendent did reach out to my office and wants to actually meet next week, this upcoming week, to try and kind of go over, you know, what some of the deficiencies are there and how the tribe can be helpful, I think. Didn't really get to the specifics. But I think that you're right. You know, these areas, they do need to be addressed, Bob. There's things that we've talked about for, I mean, since I can remember. And, you know, I guess we need to be doing better. We should be doing better, and hopefully we can achieve that. But there's just a couple of things I have to say on it. Anybody else have any questions? Comments? Come on up, Kim.
Sorry, I got a candy in my mouth. Just a couple last little things. For one, I seen that there was a conversation going on that we're not privy to in the meeting where some questions were being answered by one of our council members, Joe Marshall, but yet it wasn't being shared for us here to be able to see. If we could be, you know, if any pertinent stuff is coming up to that, it'd be nice for going on in the future on these Zooms if we could actually see the conversations. And I guess the last thoughts I have on doing with the cannabis stuff and doing the commercial growing. As a tribal member, growing up here my whole life, and having many family members who have grown, who still grow, friends who have grown, who still grow, the comment was made that the cartel are the ones that are in the forest and growing illegally. They are. Have personal experience with that after working in the field out there for many years on my own. And yeah, it's a little sketchy. I kind of refuse to actually be in the field by myself anymore due to that situation. And one situation I had in particular where I had to go drive up and get a coworker because he ran into them and had to run uphill to get away from them because they had AKs. They're not the only ones. I know tribal members who grow in our woods and have grown in our woods. And I know tribal members who like to stay out there the same way, armed and strapped with AKs, protecting their grows in our woods. I know tribal members who have set up, I can't remember what the name is, you know those traps where they set up where they have the shotgun set, so if you trigger it.
Booby trap?
No, there's a specific word for that type of booby trap. It's not a non-violent industry, as I know in the last meeting we had some people mention that, this is worse or it's not as bad as that, or it's not as, having to have the argument of it's not as bad as this or it's not as bad as that doesn't make it any good. It doesn't make it good. It just means this bad is not as bad as that. And so that's not really something I want to normalize in the reservation. As much as all these regulations that you're going to put on paper, the enforcement of regulations has been an issue for the tribe on all of our ordinances. The trespassing, we can't even enforce that. The amount of money it's going to cost to put together a decent police force, is outstanding on being able to regulate these grows and making sure people are abiding by them, making sure they're not non-tribal members growing these grows or, you know, paying a tribal member to use their name to grow these grows. Because, you know, that's a factor that's going to happen. I think we have an example of that with one of our tribal members who has a business that he left to a non-tribal member to run. I don't think the commercial growing is something our tribal people should be doing. It's not It's not our traditional ways. It's not an indigenous way. If you want to use it, I mean, it's no different than alcohol. Yeah, it's a vice. You can use it to get high for whatever reasons you need to. But using it to make money, that with the already flooded market, the issues that are going to come up for these growers and these business people who are going to be growing and wanting to sell, like the tribes, you know, I think you said at the last meeting where it's like that's, you know, their problem. That's the grower's problem to be able to figure out how they're going to transport it. We're just making the regulations as the tribal government for our tribal members to follow. The industry is not. It's not a nice one. Murder Mountain's a real thing. You know, people like to golf at it, but that thing is real. The trafficking, all that negative stuff that comes along with it, and I just don't think it's something our tribe should be involved in, and I don't think it's something we should be promoting as a tribal people, especially if we're going to want to, on the other hand, be fighting for our water rights and fighting for our fish and fighting for our traditional foods and trying to get money and funding and all this stuff to be able to do all this stuff to be able to make ourselves a food sovereign, you know, get to get our food sovereignty together and everything. This kind of like, oh, but we also, you know, promote the growing and selling of drugs that promotes guns and, you know, abuse on women and children, and tribal members being incoherent and not being able to remember things all the time. And I'm speaking as a child of, you know, pot smokers, somebody who did used to smoke pot in her younger days, and I actually stopped after I had my daughter because I couldn't be a functioning mother high. And so it's like, oh, not for me. You know, I need to be able to pay attention to my kid. So I just, yeah, just want you guys to understand. You might think it's not bad. You might have grown up in a different aspect. You may think it's an okay thing and it's normal and it makes people happy and chill and nice, but you know where it comes from, where the native region is, they used to use it before they went and assassinated people. So it's not all just peace and love and one, you know, one love, even though I am a big reggae fan. There is a lot of negatives attached to marijuana and cannabis, or sorry, cannabis and cannabis growing, and it's not who Native people are. It's not something we should be a part of.
Yeah, do you have something else, Les?
I got busy talking about the marijuana cannabis, but one of the things I want to see, Leslie Hunt is a tribal member, is more timelines and some of the things that the directors, managers bring to you guys on some of the projects that they've had. We never see where the end is supposed to end. It just seems to continue. And so when you guys are looking at the managers or dealing with some of their stuff that they're presenting, I would love to see more timelines identified and shared within the tribe. I know PFMC, I think it's January, February, I don't know if Mike's still here, but they come out with their table. It would be great to see what that table says and share that with the membership. I feel like the communication with the membership directly, and considering we have our own newspaper, should be more filled with some of the activities that the council's doing, some of the things that you guys are dealing with government-wise, federally-wise, state-wise, and you know, what kind of groups could help assist you guys, whether that's lettering campaigns or just get out the vote, whatever it is. We're going to see impacts from this new administration. And, you know, a lot of people that were Democrats were saying, I'm voting for Trump because, it, you know, Democrats have gone so way crazy. That's true, and that's probably why we, you know, I'm a Democrat and I was supporting the Democrat Party, so that's scary, and I think we should be truthful with our membership now so that we're planning accordingly. I'm also worried about our elders. We had our first outage just a few days ago, and I don't know if we're getting them prepared for the winter session, but, you know, it's cold. I thought the heater was going to work in here, but it feels so cold in here. And, you know, if we can't endure an all-day meeting because it's cold in here, I mean, you guys are all bundled up. I see Ryan with his hands in his jacket. I'm worried about the, and, you know, the elders. And sometimes, you know, when the bill changed for PG&E, my bill was almost $1,000. It was $998. They'll shut you off if you're not paying those bills. And so some of our membership do have no energy, no electrical energy to plug in a heater or do something like that. We need to be taking that into account because they're going to come back to the tribal council. So we need to look at the programs that can assist in those areas of making sure that our elders and our children are safe in their home and they're staying home. You know, no one wants to stay cold in a home that's cold. They'll go out to a restaurant or some, you know, they'll even sit in the store. They'll linger in the store because it's a warm, safe place. And so as we come into winter, I just want to make sure that we're doing that and the timelines. Thanks.
Thanks, Les. I can sit on, we're going to have manager evaluations here pretty soon, so you can kind of touch on some of that. That you talked about some timelines, maybe some goals and objectives, things that they're going to be working on. I think the Tribal Council is also working on creating not necessarily a social media position, but somebody who can help manage the website, help manage some of the tribe social media accounts to be able to disseminate information that's, whether it's positive or negative, it's just what the tribe's doing. Because I think there's a lot of stuff that's going on the Tribal Council is working on, and maybe it just falls through the cracks, or just, you know, I don't think we've ever been really good at PR. I think we've just kind of been, we just do what we do, and PR is just not something that we've really focused a lot of effort on. The elder stuff, you know, I think that you're right. You know, the it's getting cold. There's no doubt about it. We recently just kind of touched base with Kamau on the elder kerosene program, trying to get some of the tanks filled back up for the elders. I know there have been a few people who have called in and expressed some questions about if and when they were going to get the service. We've talked about also figuring out a way to either help with the servicing of some of the different heaters that folks have, and also identifying some additional funds for new ones, you know, as elders can become elders, I guess, in the tribe, 65. That was a program, I think, like 20-some years old, maybe 25 years old, so some of the heaters are probably old, and there have been a number of elders now who weren't elders then but are now, and maybe want to try and extend some of those benefits, if you will. And then also to the elder pay, I know it's really important to people, and we're trying to do what we can to make sure that continues. We haven't really talked about raising that, but maybe it's something we can consider. Anyhow, any other questions? Comments? If not, anybody from the council, any more comments? No? Okay, I guess we're going to close the meeting. I appreciate everybody being here. It is almost 6 o'clock. Holy cow. But thanks, everybody, for attending. We'll see you next time.